Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
What in the world is happening on Wall Street?
Economic indicators.
Who knows where this is going to end up?
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
How are you doing there? I'm laughing at John. He's trying to tell me where to go with the mic, where not to go. Don't move around. How can I not move around? I'm trying
to. No, don't go crazy, man. Don't go crazy. Sometimes you get a little overexcited.
I'm into this economic stuff. I get enthusiastic. How are you, Ed?
I'm good. I'm very good.
Good. How are you doing there? Welcome to the podcast. Funny all week. Had a midlife crisis this week, man.
Another one?
Yeah.
Oh my God. How many can you have?
Do you know what I did? I went out and bought a Vespa.
Did you?
I swear to Jesus. Lambretta.
Oh, really?
Original Lambretta design. New UK company bought the design called Royal Alloy.
Right.
Red and white.
It's lovely.
The business.
I hope you have lots of mirrors and the rabbit's tail.
But I just thought, okay, that's it.
Yeah.
Midlife crisis. I could have, you know, taken up lead guitar, you know, la, 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 la. I said, no, get a Vespa.
No, that was a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So forget about the Ferrari. But when are you getting it? You haven't got it yet.
Friday.
Oh, really?
Friday. Got to go in and collect in.
Oh, superb.
The center of town.
Yeah.
I am going to be just in heaven. Because, you know, I had one, obviously. Remember when we were in London?
Yeah, you had one in London.
And,
yeah.
And then it got robbed. That's the problem with Vespas. They always get robbed.
Well, you know.
Your Vespa's always robbed, isn't it?
But I had three. Between myself and the missus, we had three and they all got robbed and or trashed.
Yeah, hey, what's with the trashing them?
I don't know.
Some guy gives them a dig.
Yeah, they just, you know, they race it around a bit and then they just dump it in a hedge somewhere.
Yeah.
Or set them on fire. That's the other thing they love doing.
Yeah, well, listen, if anybody touches this Vespa, I know people. We know where you live. Anyway, so that was my week. That was my midlife crisis. How was your midlife crisis?
This week was the usual ding dong, as my mother would say, except for the most exciting thing this week. In fact, do you know what? Have a listen to it. Now, that, my friend, is Mars. That is the sound of Mars. I mean, they should have used the pop filter on the mic and all, in fairness. But isn't that amazing? I mean,
that's the sound of Mars.
That is Perseverance that landed on Mars this week. And it got out the old wheels and started sending back beautiful pictures of Mars. Like, it's really incredible when you're looking at the horizon of another planet.
And the sound of another planet.
Then they stick up the mic. And that, for me,
so that's wind.
Yeah.
And Martian wind.
And I was just blown away by that. Excuse the pun.
I can see it. I can see. You should see his face now here, you know. I was blown away.
I would have used a different mic, though.
Yeah, exactly. I have seen that face over many decades.
Here's a special news bulletin.
We interrupt this podcast to bring you a news update. It appears that the audio we just played of the wind of Mars, which sounded fantastic, is not in fact from Perseverance that landed on Mars this week. I'm devastated. But I have been reliably informed by a number of our Twitter followers that this indeed was fake. But apparently there will be some audio and pictures from Perseverance in the next few weeks. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I will be playing it on this podcast. So that's that. Apologies again. Now, back to the show.
Anyway, what do we want to talk about?
Well, I tell you what.
What's interesting you in the world of economics and finance?
Well, it's all fascinating. Where do I begin? No, but the thing this week that, and this seemed to come out of the blue, or maybe you correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed to come out of the blue, Ulster Bank pulling out of
Yeah,
Ireland.
It's a really big story. Well,
what's the
this
story
is a
there?
Really, really big story. And we'll deal with it. So this week, I think we're going to talk about Ulster Bank.
Yeah.
And then I want to talk about housing again.
Yeah, yeah.
And the
yeah.
amount of houses we have to build in this country just to keep up with demand and how they're all linked together, because all these stories are linked together.
Yeah.
So the Ulster Bank, the first thing, so why did they pull out? Ireland is very, very difficult. It's a very, very difficult place to make money in banking, right? This is a very, we have
really?
Not got, no, I mean, I'll just, if you're a banker, right?
Right.
We have not got over the legacy of 2008. And I always say 2008, the banking crisis in Ireland started in 2000, not 2008. 2008 was just the crisis.
Right.
But the crisis only evidenced the stupid decisions which were taken in the boom, right?
Right.
So the crisis is the end point. But the start point is when Irish bankers, so-called bankers, started to lend and lend and lend and lend. Mm. And the problem with banks, if you keep lending, you'll go bust. But
well,
the problem
yeah.
is that banks don't see this because their balance sheet plays tricks on them. So the more the bank lends, the more profits they book, because obviously if you're lending, you're getting revenue in. And the executives of the banks think that they're sitting on gold mines when they're actually sitting on a bag of shite, right?
Right, okay.
And that's, of course, what I was shouting and roaring about in the boom, right? So
yeah.
I'll tell you what happened, right?
Yeah.
Because of the banking crisis here, because it was so unbelievably extensive, right?
Mm.
Every single bank in Ireland was bust, every single one, right? The legacy of that is that Irish banks now have to set aside more money
right.
for the rainy day. They have a piggy bank, right?
Oh, yeah.
These
okay.
are the buffers, right?
Yeah,
it's called
yeah.
the tier one capital.
Mm-hmm.
Then banks in other countries. Why? Because our experience has been much more traumatic. So our regulator, the central bank, having done nothing in the boom, is
right.
now over-regulating in the bust.
Okay.
So what it says is that if you want to do business in Ireland as a bank, you need to keep more money in reserve, this capital buffer,
yeah.
than an equivalent Spanish bank, Belgian bank, or
right.
Dutch bank.
But that's a good thing, though, right?
That's a good thing, but it means that the banks, therefore, have to keep more cash on deposit. It means, therefore, if they want to try and make profit, according to them, they have to charge more interest because such amount of their capital is kept idle that they can't
right.
use, right? So that's the first thing. So the idea, and eventually the guys in NatWest, the British bank that owned Ulster Bank, said, under these conditions, we cannot make money, right?
Right.
Or more importantly, these conditions, we can't make enough money.
Enough
right?
money, yeah, I was okay? going to say, yeah,
and why don't we take our capital out of Ireland and deploy it in the UK or elsewhere where we can use more of it. So imagine that the banks have a sort of a piggy bank
yeah.
that they have to put reserves in there for the rainy day. Now, why we do that is because Irish banks are badly managed.
Right. You've said this before.
This is
yeah.
an endemically boom-bust economy because of the banking system.
Right.
And it's because the banking system is joined at the hip to the housing market, and it's because the housing market serves the interests of landowners. It's all the one big picture.
But what the central bank's role in this, they're doing this to try and address the crap banking.
Well, if you want my opinion on it, what happened is it's like everything, you know, it's a bit like if you go out on the lash
mm-hmm.
on a Friday night and you get up on Saturday and you say, I'm never going to drink again. Right?
Yeah.
Now, it would be much easier. You know that creature,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
It would be much easier to moderate
well,
your drinking.
To.
You moderate your drinking on Friday, right? What has happened is the Irish regulators and central banks, because they missed everything in the boom, because they didn't regulate at all.
Yeah.
They're now over-regulating. And you see this quite a lot in people's behavior, that sometimes when you decide to be virtuous, it's like somebody who gives up something And then they become evangelical about giving up, right?
Yeah.
So it's something similar. But I'll explain to you how banks work, okay?
Yeah,
because it's important because there is a big deal.
Give me a crash course.
I'll give you a crash course. Corporate finance.
Corporate
101,
finance.
101.
Right.
And also, bear in mind the image of the West lower stand. You know the West Stand and the Aviva?
Yeah.
You know the lower part of that, which is a sheepskin coat central, right?
Collars up.
Collars up, right? Just so you know, for those who are not listening from Ireland, the Aviva Stadium is a big football and rugby stadium, just so you know.
The stadium used to be called Lansdowne Road.
Exactly. It used to be called Lansdowne Road, but it's now called the Aviva Stadium. And of course, Aviva is a British insurance company. They are the guys who run the banking community, right? They're the people who've never paid for a ticket at an international ever, right? Because they always go in corporate finance. So imagine the faces, right?
Yeah.
Those gentlemen want to divvy up Ulster Bank into AIB and Bank of Ireland, take all the good bits, right, and keep it in-house, right?
Right.
Whereas there might be an option also for an outside bank to come in and take it and inject a bit of competition.
Mm.
But the West Lower and the Aviva, they don't want competition. What they want is the rent. Remember we talked about the rentier economies?
Yes, yeah.
This comes back to the rentier economy. So at the moment, I would say Pascal Donoghue's door, it'd be bashed down.
Yeah, it's coming off the hinges.
It's coming off the hinges by fellas in Prada trying to tell him, just give it to AIB or Bank of Ireland, okay? And don't be worried about this. Or PTSB.
Right.
Right? Just keep it in the house. So sell it to us.
Right.
Okay?
And tell me, first of all, what's wrong with that? Or what could go wrong with that?
Well, what could go wrong with that is that if you get a duopoly in the banking system, so you have no competition. So you have very, very little pressure for the banks to do anything other than to charge their way out of their problems.
Mm.
So basically, the Irish banks chat to each other and they say, look, you do this, we'll do this. You know,
and central bank has no say on this at all.
The central bank has a say, but central bank's got two main jobs here. One is the stability of the system, to ensure the stability. And the other is, well, I know it would be quite nice for the consumer to do quite okay. Right?
Right, okay.
But it's the stability of the system is the key thing, right? And so anything that makes the system unstable for them, they will go against.
Right.
But the problem is, in order to change the system, you have to have a little bit of instability. You have to have something coming in from the outside.
Yeah. Yeah.
But let's just explain what's going on. Why Irish banking is different to Spanish banking or Italian banking.
Okay.
The reason I say Spanish is there could be a Spanish bank in the mix in the future.
Okay,
okay.
Right.
We'll talk about that in a sec, right? But it's a thing called the Tier 1 ratio. So remember you said to me, is there any, remember a couple of months ago, you said, is there any impediment to a bank creating money? And I said, no, because they can just keep creating loans. However, there is an impediment. They have to keep a certain amount of what are called risk-weighted assets. They have to keep a certain amount of that in cash. So it's usually about 14 euros for every 100 euros lent out. They have to keep in cash, right? That's called a tier one capital.
Okay.
But it's those 100 euros they lent out is different from every different bank. So you've lent out 100 euros, but the risk associated with those 100 euros is different from every different bank. So I'll give you an example. If I lend you 100 euros and you give me your house as collateral, the risk weight of that deal is very low for me because if you default, I can just take your house.
Yeah.
That's on a mortgage.
Yeah.
Imagine I lend you that 100 quid on your credit card.
Yeah.
And you say, listen, Macker, I'm actually going to Indonesia tomorrow and I'll see you in about a year's time. Yeah. And you know what? See you later, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Then I'm left nothing as the banker, as the lender.
Yeah.
So the risk weighted associated with different types of lending is very, very different. So in the aggregate, Irish banks and all banks have to keep 14 euros for every 100.
Mm.
But then it depends on what are you lending? What is that 100 lending? And in the case of Ireland, the risk-weighted assets are much riskier. Why? People say because we didn't foreclose. So, for example, do you know what happened when the crash happened?
Yeah.
In the United States, for example, or in the UK or anywhere else, if you default on your house, you get kicked out.
Sure, yeah.
Right? But that doesn't happen in Ireland. So the banks, because the Irish court said, well, hold on a second, we have a social obligation here, right? Which is the right thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
But the cost of that is the risk associated with the lending goes up because the bank can't get your mortgage if you default.
Gotcha. Right? Yeah,
there's a whole lot of things in the mix. But in general, Ireland should be a really good bet for banking. Why? Because we have a very, very young population, right? Mm-hmm. And we have a much faster growing population. But the dilemma for banking here is it's a boom-bust economy, right? So there's always this risk. And why is it a boom-bust? Because of what we're going to talk about in another few minutes, the price of housing.
Right.
If Irish house prices were at 200 grand, i.e. three or four times average income, or five times average income, there'd be no risk associated with it. But sure. Because Irish house prices are at 500 grand, there's always a risk that people are going to default.
Yeah.
Because you lose your job, you just lose your house. So that's the first thing. So the tier one ratio in Ireland is more onerous on the banks here because of a number of things, one of which is the way we deal with repossessions, but the other one is the legacy of the boom itself,
right? Like
the bust itself. There's so many bad loans and there's so much stuff still in the banking system, right? And of course, the Irish banks didn't use the last 10 years to get rid of these stuff, right? And the way you could have got rid of bad loans is you could sell them on to these vulture funds.
Right.
So the Irish
banks, did a lot of that stuff.
They probably didn't do, this is what they're saying, they probably didn't do enough of that to get rid of all these things, right?
Right.
And of course, it's because people don't want them. People are saying, hold on a second, I don't want my apartment owned by a vulture fund.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right,
okay.
So all these things are in the mix, right?
So now is it another good thing?
So you've got these things. You've got this social need to look after the society coherently.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the fact that Irish bankers were incredibly, incredibly amateur in the boom, right?
Wow.
And then in the bust, they have been terrified of doing anything. And of course, the central bank, which was incredibly amateurish, let's divide the world into 20 years.
Yeah.
2000 to 2010, 2010 to now, right?
Yeah.
Those three. The first 10 years, it was a free-for-all, destroyed the country, right? And created this crazy, crazy bust, right? Second 10 years is the legacy of that. And we end up in a situation where the owners of NatWest say, you know what? It's not worth our while.
Right.
Being there, okay. Right? So then the question is, who buys Ulster Bank? Now, Ulster Bank is a big bank. It's 20 billion euros of assets and 20 billion euros of deposits. So it's a big, big bank.
Right. How does that compare to
It's smaller than AIB and Bank of Ireland, but it's still a substantially big bank.
Yeah.
And now you've got to look at, you know, who basically is going to buy this, right?
Yeah.
So now you're in the Aviva. And Mick is talking to Tony, right? He's
right.
Talking to Richie and Ross.
Right, and Tarquin.
Well, Tarquin is the English advisor from Casanova Brothers.
Oh, he's over on a jolly
He's then. Over on a jolly. He wants to sing Sweet Low, Sweet Jerry.
Yeah.
But he's getting paid a fortune to do what we're doing now for free.
Right.
To explain to you what's actually going on. It's a public service, right? So Mick, and of course they all like Tarquin.
There's not a few points there, Tarquin. Yeah.
Exactly. You're up there at halftime. Sure. Tarquin is now, and Tarquin, I can tell you, is in one of those, you know, those coats that they wear with the velvet collars.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right? Crombie style.
Crombie, right. So Tarquin's in the Crombie, up at the bar, when Mick and Tony and Joe are dividing up Ireland amongst themselves in the West Lower, right? That's how it works. And what they're saying to each other is exactly this. They're saying, well, so let's say there's 20 billion in the bank.
Yeah.
So that's 20 billion of assets, right? So let's say 4 billion of that is what's called the corporate book. So that's Ulster lending to Irish corporates. So Ulster lending to a big Irish corporate, right?
Okay.
So that's simple, easy peasy business. They don't default. That's it, right? That's the first thing. So Joe's saying, oh, I wouldn't mind getting my hands on that. Mick's saying, well, hold on a second, I'll trade you that, right? All that's while Pascal is sitting at home.
Without a
ticket for the game. Then on the tracker mortgages, remember the trackers? There's about 8 billion of those. Nobody wants them because they don't make money for banks.
Right.
Because there's not enough margin on them.
Okay.
Then there's about 6 billion of new mortgages, post-2008 mortgages. And in that 6 billion is 2008 mortgages and SME lending.
Okay.
And somebody wants that. And then there's about 2 billion of non-performing loans, which are loans that have been defaulted on.
2 billion?
In Ulster banks.
Right.
Right.
You said Seems a lot.
So that's what you're buying. That's what Ulster Bank is.
Sometimes when all these figures are flying around, it's just numbers and you don't quite appreciate $2 billion is $2,000 million.
Yes, exactly. It is a lot, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So Tarquin is now at the bar.
Right.
Right. Good man. Ross Byrne is about to put something over the bar. Anyway, so Tarquin's at the bar. Mick, Tony and Joe from the Irish bankers are divvying up this.
Yeah.
Right? And of course, everyone wants the corporate loans because they're good. They're really easy. Nobody wants the trackers.
Yeah.
Right? Give that to PTSB, you know, permanent TSB, right?
Barry, you have that.
It's Barry from permanent TSB. Barry, come on in. You have that, right? And that's how Ireland works.
Right. No, but seriously, how does it work?
That is how it works. So they're divvying up. So basically all those guys are pressurising Pascal to say, look, let's keep it in amongst the lads.
Right.
And then, of course, the deposits, right, which is 20 billion, you know, they can, if it's Irish Permanent, well, they'll take a few bits. So basically what they want to do is they want to give the trackers to Irish Permanent. So that's 6 odd billion of trackers.
Okay.
And what they'll say to Irish Permanent is you can also have 6 billion of the deposits of the bank, right?
Okay.
So you as an
Ulster... That's the sweetener.
Yeah. Right, so you as an Ulster Bank punter will end up having an Irish Permanent account, right?
Right.
But the deal has been done in the West Lower with Mick and Tony and Joe, right?
But can I ask you, like, where does Pascal come into this? Like, what? It's not up to him. These are private companies.
No, but you see, you asked a very good question. See, Pascal is in a difficult position because he owns AIB.
Right.
And he owns PTSB or whatever it is, post-traumatic stress disorder, whatever it's called. PTSB, right? Okay. Because the state owns those. So the state obviously wants to get paid back if it ever wants to sell these.
Yeah.
So again, the next iteration is it's not really private companies. It's all the lads talking to the lads talking to the lads. Okay, that's why Pascal's important.
Right, okay.
Because he's actually the major shareholder. And it's not him, it's us. We own the bloody thing.
Yeah.
This is a public service explaining.
So we should be on the lower stand eating prawn sandwiches.
Prawn sandwiches, getting Tarquin in his trophy to buy us Gargle, right? But we're not. We're locked out in Dunleary. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the deal that the Irish banks want to do, right?
Right.
So nobody gets hurt except the consumer. Why? Because at the end of the day, there's only two banks. There'll only be AIB and Bank of Ireland and the PTSB.
Yeah.
And what do? Rather than bring down interest rates, bring down charges, what they say is, look, Tarquin's gone back to England, the advisor. We have the gig here. Why not get another few pints and put up the price?
Did Tarquin leave his card behind the bar?
Tarquin's card's behind the bar, but Tarquin's card is an expense account. And who pays it? The Department of Finance. Because they own the bank in the first place, which means you and me.
Right.
So it's all the lads have done this, right? There's another thing. There's two other banks maybe in the game.
Mm.
There's KBC, which is a Belgian bank.
Yeah.
Which is here. And there's a new Spanish bank called Bank Inter. Have you seen Avantcard?
Yeah.
So those guys, they're a Spanish bank. And Bank Inter is a big Spanish bank.
Oh, okay.
And they've come in here and nobody's talking much. That's why I said we talk about the Spaniards.
Yeah.
Now they might be interested in getting involved, right? And of course, they've balance sheet. They have a much bigger balance sheet in Spain that could pay for all this.
Right.
So, but the Irish lads, Mick, Tony and Joe.
Yeah.
And Barry now, who's in on the last bill, they don't want Julio and Cesar coming in, right? Or Pablito. They don't want him, right? Nor do they want Henny van der Merwe from the Flams Bank in the KBC. But KBC have an interest in it because KBC have a very strange book. KBC have 10 billion of assets in Ireland, but only 5 billion of deposits. So the 5 billion, the difference between their assets and the deposits is paid for by the Belgian parent bank injecting money in every year.
Oh.
It would make a big deal for them to buy, for example, Ulster with its 20 billion of deposits.
Right. So they all of a sudden become a big player.
But they also become liquid internally.
Yes.
And all their money is raised in Ireland. So the Belgian parent will say, well, that's quite cool.
Yeah.
Because basically it means that the Irish thing can look after itself.
Yeah.
But the Irish lads don't want that because that means Belgians will be in there. They might do things like be competitive.
Oh, yeah. We don't want that at all.
And of course, the Spaniards are dipping their toe in the mortgage market now, and they could be in.
Right.
So there's all sorts of things at play, right?
So can I just ask you, like, Okay, you've mentioned KBC come from Belgium, but why aren't there more European banks operating in Ireland?
Because in order to do business here, you have to set aside more capital. Now, that's crazy because I can understand Irish banks with the legacy of having made a royal mess.
Yeah.
And having this non-performing loans, etc.
Yeah.
This is why there is an opportunity for a whole new bank here. Comes in and has a big balance sheet in, let's say, France,
yeah,
or Germany,
yeah,
or Sweden or wherever, puts a little bit of it to work here because they say, do you know what? Young population, fast-growing economy, all we need is a couple of good custodians, mature people at the top, and we could actually undercut these large Irish dinosaurs,
yeah. Yeah.
Offer people low rates, works fine. But here's the but. Pascal owns AIB. It is not in the state's interest to have a highly competitive banking system that makes AIB look even weaker than it is.
Right.
Think about it. The state wants to sell AIB, and it will never sell AIB if some Swedish outfit comes in here, gives us a good deal and undermines AIB, which is why the likes of AIB are buying stockbrokers, like Goodbody stockbrokers, yeah, and they're getting involved here and all this sort of thing, because what it does, it deflects from their underlying weakness. Because what they can do then, they can do mergers, right, with various banks. And what will happen then, the Irish banks will merge, let's say, with Ulster Bank.
Mm-hmm.
They will already have saved on the 2,000 people who are going to lose their jobs.
Yeah.
They put them together. They get what they call economies of scale. But what you notice in all situations where businesses are going bad is they tend to try to buy themselves out of trouble.
Okay. Right.
If, as a general rule, the best way for a bad business to look good is to consolidate.
Right.
So what they do is they say, Tarquin.
Yeah.
They say, Tarquin, come back here when you're back from the bar. Will you go to London and will you raise 10 billion for me? Tarquin says, oh, okay, yeah, that'll point because Tarquin's going to get paid.
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
No, he's not off that. He's more posh.
Yes, of course he is. Yes.
Yeah, so, yeah, he's, yeah.
Home counties.
Yeah, exactly. He's Tarquin.
And his red pants.
And his red, yes, his red pants. Exactly. So you raise 10 billion off Tarquin.
Mm.
Tarquin gets paid 2%. 2% of 10 billion.
Nice.
There's a lot of bread,
yeah,
for Tarquin, right? Then Tarquin gives the money to Mick. Mick uses that money to buy Ulster Bank.
Yeah.
So Mick then has a debt to Tarquin that he can service. He buys Ulster Bank. He consolidates the balance sheet. Mick looks like a genius. But all he's done is borrowed money.
Right.
That's how the whole thing works. I know it sounds really weird, but that's the dirty little secret, the finance. Okay? And what we're seeing here is it's all coming into play.
Right.
And what you'll be amazing now, over the next couple of days, watch the newspapers, watch RTE. There'll be spokespeople on, there'll be experts on, they'll all be paid.
So it's all spin.
It's all spin. So it's a massive big spin. But I come back to the fact that the Irish banking system is weak because we have an endemically boom-bust economy. Why do we have an endemically boom-bust economy? Because the banks are soldered at the hip to the land lobby. And the land lobby has an interest in making sure that not enough land is released. So the price of land goes up and we get ourselves into this crazy credit cycle again and again and again. And this is at the root of our problem. And if you fix land, you fix everything else.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Okay, Mike, you're talking there. That was very good, actually. You're talking there about banking and housing being joined at the hip.
Yes.
And
that creating a boom bust economy, which we're paying for in having to have higher tier capital requirements and therefore having a banking system that's totally dysfunctional.
Okay, so that's banking. Talk to me about housing then and where we go from here.
Well, I think on the issue of housing, it's like everything, you know, probably the easiest thing to do in economics, given that you know what demography is going to be, right? Because when babies are born, they have a good chance of living here.
Yeah.
So you know 25 years out what your housing demand is going to be. Think about it, right?
Yeah. Okay.
It's a simple thing to do, right?
Yeah.
So basically you say, how many babies are born every year? Let's project out 25 years. There's a very, very good chance that those kids want to leave home.
Mm.
So you know, so the easiest thing in economics is to forecast housing demand if you want to do that. It's really easy, right? How then in a society like Ireland can we have housing booms and busts if it's so easy to forecast?
Yeah.
Right? Because nobody wants to forecast. And the reason they don't want to forecast is the state has absolved itself of this responsibility. Because Ireland is...
That's a really basic responsibility. That
isn't
the state,
it? But yeah. Ireland is still one of the least densely populated countries in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the highest housing costs and land prices.
Yeah.
So that makes no sense in economics.
Yeah.
Right? Because if you've a lease, if you've low population density, you should have low land prices.
Sure.
Unless somebody is interfering.
Yeah.
Back to our friends.
Yeah.
Mick, Joe, Tarquin, a whole lot of it. So housing demand is a function of five things. It's your population, then your migration.
Yeah.
Then your family size structure.
Mm-hmm.
Then your divorces, because that creates a demand.
Yeah.
And then what you would call obsolescence, how much of your housing stock needs to be rebuilt because it's very old.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
All these things you can figure out.
Yeah.
And then you get yourself a figure. Now, at the moment, the Irish state says we need to build 25,000 houses a year. Homes, let's say. Units.
Right. Okay.
My calculations would say we need to double that. That it's actually 50% shy of what we need.
Yeah.
So we can go through those figures.
Yeah, go on, tell me.
Okay, so let's break it down. Look at the facts in Ireland, right? We have a population of 4.9 million. So call it 5 million.
Yeah.
And we have a natural increase in the population. This is last year, of 27,100, which is babies born minus the amount of people who die.
Right.
And we had net migration of 28,000 last year.
Okay.
So we had more migrants than we had natural population growth last year, which is something which get the Irish Freedom Party up in a hissy fit, okay? Yeah. The average household size in Ireland is 2.6. So that means in the average unit, whether it's an apartment or a house, there's 2.6 people living.
Right.
And the European average is 2.3. This means something, okay?
Right.
And we built about 20,000 houses last year. So that's the facts, okay? We also had 4,000 divorces last year. And the reason divorces are important is because you need two houses where you had one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jeez, that's probably going to shoot up because of COVID.
I know.
And lockdown.
Exactly. So we can assume 10,000 divorces, doubling the divorce, right? Okay. So then you've got to, then you can say, okay, well, that's where we start. Like, well, how do we figure the whole thing out? So the National Planning Framework says it's assuming migration of 12,000 per year, 12,500. But in actual fact, last year's figure was nearly 30,000.
Right.
So they're underestimating
migration. Why are they
migration.
Doing that?
I think it's politics.
Right, okay.
I think they don't want to admit that there are so many migrants coming in here. That's my sense, because it's very low a 12,500 migrant forecast when you know last year alone nearly 30,000 people turned up here.
Right.
Seems to me pretty way off the mark, okay? Mm, mm. Now, the estimate is for every 10,000 new immigrants, we need to build 4,000 dwellings because they have a slightly smaller average household size, about 2.5 migrants per dwelling. So already we're talking about 30,000 means 12,000 new dwellings. So we have 18,000 for our own population,
yeah.
12,000 from the migrants. And the third thing is structure of Irish families are changing because we're having less people per house. So in the old days, there might have been 10 paddies in a house, right? That's got down to 2.6. Let's say it goes down to 2.3, which is probably the European average. And that's a function of urbanization and all that sort of stuff, right?
Okay.
So we need more houses per people. Okay. I'll give you, for example, if Ireland's population is 6.2 million in 2051, which I think it will be, we'd need roughly 2.5 million dwellings if the average household size was 2.5. But we need an additional 270,000 new dwellings if the average household size went down to 2.3, which is why it's important, right?
Okay.
So obviously, as the amount of people in the house falls, you've got to build more houses to populate everybody else.
Yeah.
And this dynamic is kind of baked in because we see this happening all the time in every country. And then finally, we're talking about this obsolescence, right?
Yeah.
About 150,000 Irish people, Irish households, not people, households, live in buildings that are more than 100 years old.
Right.
And the majority of those in the countryside.
Yeah.
At some stage, they're going to have to be rebuilt.
Yeah.
Because they're just not fit for purpose. They're just getting too old. If you'd imagine that 0.5% of your total housing stock is obsolete every year, which is the average, and your current housing stock, there's 2 million houses out there, that means you've got to build at least 10,000 units per annum just to rebuild old houses.
Yeah.
You take them all together and the fact that we're playing catch up, you know, because between 2010 and 2020, we didn't build half as many houses as we needed.
Mm.
And that has led to the fact that loads and loads of people are living with their parents who don't want to, right?
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you put all those things together, right?
Yep.
And this gives you the natural increase. We probably have to build 18,000 new units a year. With the immigrants, another 12,000 units per year. The change in divorce and separation structure of the Irish houses means we need to build another 15,000, okay? Obsolescence adds another 10,000. That gives you a figure of 55,000 units per year have to be built in this country just to stay with demand.
Yeah.
So the only way to get back to JM's dilemma and his generation, and your kids and my kids, the only way in which we can actually equal demand, which will keep prices where they are, not decrease prices, where they are, is by building twice as many houses every year as the government says we need.
Jesus.
So that's the truth of it, right?
Wow.
Now let's go back to Tarquin.
Yes.
Unless the state or some new agency comes in and forces down house prices, those 55,000 houses are going to be financed by Mick, Joe, Tony and Barry.
Yeah.
Okay? Mick, Joe, they're now on their fifth round of stout, right? The hip flasks are out. Ireland are at least a half a dozen points down. The game is, as they say in rugby, running away from us. But the reason Irish banking is attractive for the lads is that if they can capture this 55,000 houses need to be built and lend out mortgages against every single one of them, they're sitting on a gold mine.
Yeah.
An uncompetitive gold mine because they've got Pascal in their pocket because Pascal owns the banks and he can't have competition in. So the West Lower is now on the lash. They've already...
It's a full weekend.
They have ordered. They're in Gibos.
Yeah.
They're in every swanky restaurant in town. When we open up again, they'll have the double jab vaccine. They'll be all fine. We're talking about next autumn internationals.
Yeah.
Okay, that's where we are now, right? The lads have sewn up the deal over the summer, Ulster Bank. Tarquin is at the bar.
Yeah.
They know we've got to build 55,000 houses, so they're going to finance every one of them. Why would they want to change? And that's how Ireland works.
We'll be right back.
Now, while I have you there again, why not use the time when you're locked up to learn economics? Join me on Patreon. Patreon.com/David McWilliams. Let's learn economics together. We have the economics course. Macroeconomics has never been as essential to understand. We have the Ask Mac tutorials every other week. We have Q&A. We've got the reading list. And more importantly, you become part of the community. If you have a question, if you have something that's going on you want to ask me, join me on Patreon. Email in. I will answer your question. But more importantly, it's ad-free. Just you and me and your man across the way.
Hey.
Patreon.com/Dave McWilliams. And let's figure out the world together.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.